Very good. So, now I can start this morning's another talk on meditation. And today I'm going to start talking about the meditation on the breath. And deliberately I put off this talk until the second or third day, simply because I wanted you to start relaxing and preparing your mind for being able to watch the breath. But as an introduction to what I'm going to be saying, I was reminded by one of the people here who went to some of the places I went to, that when I was young, trying to find any place to meditate, I went on a Zen meditation retreat. And it's very different than what I'd learned elsewhere. But being young and adventurous, you're always willing to try anything new, follow the instructions to see what would happen. You very didn't have many views and ideas, so you weren't resistant to new ways of practicing, so I gave it a try. This was where we were sitting facing a whitewashed wall with our eyes open. And that's all the instructions we're given. Just sit there, keep your eyes open, and watch the wall. Very good. How embarrassing. Yeah, go and find the network. There's no network connection here, don't even try. If you want to record the talk, please, you probably want to record the talk, please do so. So anyway, there you were, looking at a wall for, I don't know, hour after hour after hour. And I didn't know what you're supposed to do. But at least I had enough training in meditation just to keep in the present moment and keep my mind peaceful and quiet, which was really important for what happened next. If you didn't keep your mind peaceful and quiet, if you started thinking about things, planning, writing your autobiography, because I was only 20 at the time, so I had plenty to write about my life. So arrogant at that age. And so I was looking at the wall, not knowing really what's supposed to happen. And that is when something wonderful happened. The wall vanished. And I wasn't at all afraid or scared, because this was, you know, early 70s, when weird things were really fashionable. So there I was, just watching, and the wall had gone, vanished. I thought, wow, this is really cool. So instead of being afraid, I just was experiencing just a vanished wall. And wondering afterwards, you know, why? What did that happen? What happened? Was I going crazy? Did they put magic mushrooms in the curry that day? What happened? And then it didn't take me long to get insight, to work out what was going on. And all that was going on was to realize a truth which you probably have discovered in other areas of perception. When the brain sees something or hears something or feels something and it doesn't change, when it is still, it vanishes. In the same way that you hear sounds of traffic in the background, sounds of like the hum of the air conditioner last night. Whatever it is, as long as the sound is constant, it doesn't change in intensity or in pitch. After a while, you cannot hear it anymore. Your brain is only wired to notice things which change. And if they don't change, they vanish. It's the same with feelings in the body. Now the example now, I'm going to disturb you all by asking you to become aware of the feeling of saliva in your throat. Can you feel that now? Now just let it go. You can't, once you get sort of aware of it, it stays there and you have to swallow, and you don't swallow and you dribble, because once you start to become aware of it, it doesn't really go away. But just wait for a while. In another minute or two, you won't be aware of it at all. The feeling will be there, but because it doesn't change, your mind turns off. And that was the whitewashed wall teaching. If you can actually just be mindful just of a wall, a whitewashed wall, instead of your thoughts, instead of just, you know, plans and memories and fantasies. If you can just quietly just be aware of a whitewash wall, after a few minutes it vanishes, it turns off. It's just not there anymore. And the similar experience which you all have, if you turn on your computer, and if you don't press any button after a while, the screen turns off. Because even computers are only built for actually to, if you do something, if things change, otherwise it just stops. And that's like the nature of the brain and also of the mind. It can only notice things which change. When things are still, they vanish. And this is an important understanding of how meditation works. And why the breath is not just a choice to watch, but it is just a natural path into the deep meditations. And the reason is, because if you follow the instructions, you're sitting here, you're relaxing the body, so there is no aches and pains, there's no throbs, there's no irritations. Your body is so relaxed, that feeling is very stable. It doesn't change. Which means that your body can disappear and vanish. It is why that little practice was important if you want to fall asleep at night. Because if you have a pain or an ache, especially if it throbs, if it changes, it will keep you awake. But if things are stable, you're comfortable, you're not too cold, not too hot, things are stable, it allows the body to disappear, to allow you to fall asleep. You need that stillness in the body. You also need a certain degree of sound stability for the sound to turn off. Again, humming in the background is easier to fall asleep. There are some people who live under flight paths and they fall fast asleep because it's constant. I used to ask my mother, she used to live in London during the Second World War, during the Blitz, with bombs going off all the time. They could still go to sleep because the bombs never stopped. Bang, 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 bang. So eventually it turned off. So, this is an important thing to know, that when your body relaxes and it vanishes, then the only thing left to watch is the mind. And of course, then we start, most of us, start just watching the thoughts, thinking this, thinking that. So we have to somehow calm and soften those thoughts so they can disappear, to see what's next. And that is why, first day, I ask you to learn how to relax your body so you can keep it reasonably still. You can sit for half an hour, 45 minutes, or even longer. And then to relax the mind, so the mind isn't being agitated by thoughts, memories, plans. It's reasonably still and peaceful. Because then, the past and the future can disappear. They vanish. It's very much the same as sight vanishes. You don't know the moment, you know, when you close your eyes, when you stop seeing. Because when I close my eyes, for the first few seconds, I see the inside of my eyelids. You can try it now. Close your eyes. You see the inside of your eyelids. But after a few seconds, you don't know when. You can open your eyes now. After a few seconds, just you don't see anything at all. Sight actually turns off. And this is actually how it works. So keeping the past and future reasonably calm, you don't have to let it go, just soften it, make it reasonably still, like a background noise, and then it vanishes. It's not there anymore. And another skillful means, you know, if that's not working, if somebody is snoring, and please never complain about people who make noise in the meditation hall, because there was this one occasion many, many years ago. And I was teaching a retreat in Sydney. And after the first day, half of the questions which came in the evening were complaining about one meditator. And the questions basically were saying, can you please tell people to breathe quietly in the hall? Because this gentleman was breathing really loudly. and other people were being disturbed by the loud noise of his breathing. And so then I had to tell everybody on that retreat that that gentleman has this huge tumor in his sinuses. He's dying of sinus cancer. His doctors have given up on him. No more chemotherapy, radiation therapy, no surgery is possible anymore. And he's just come on this retreat as the last throw of the dice. Maybe meditation can keep him alive. And the reason he's breathing loudly, because that's the only thing he can do. He's got a big tumor up his nose. And as soon as I said that, no one complained. When they heard his breathing, had this wonderful compassion for him. Wow, he's actually giving his best shot. Have you ever noticed that if anyone does make a noise, I think I mentioned this already the first night, but I'm going to reinforce it now. If anyone does make a noise, their noise is very tiny. The reaction in your brain, now that is the real noise. I shouldn't be doing this. Oh, we shouldn't allow people to make a noise in the hall. We should get people to be more kind and more silent. We should ban people. We only have quiet people in our retreat from now on. That noise, that's what disturbs you. So the other noise is just nature. And after a while, if it is a distraction to you, try this method of overcoming the distractions to your meditation. And that is the television simile. Because I've been on many aircraft and I've seen people sat next to people and they watch the movies during the flight. And I've seen the screens, they're tiny screens, about this big. And they watch a movie on it. How on earth can they do that? Now, I don't usually watch those movies, but I must admit that I did watch a couple of movies once. And once I did actually was travelling with Burr, and I asked her permission. She said, oh yeah, please do that. Because one of the things which I'm really, really very give into again and again and again is comedy. I just, sometimes I can't resist. It's my nature, resisting comedies. I was telling that to the monk here this morning. And I was just, you're just on the flight, just looking through the magazines. And there was a movie on there, and it was called Cockneys versus Zombies. And I thought, this is such a weird movie. And it was Cockney. I was from London. So I thought that was an excuse. And it was such a funny movie. I may be because I don't watch many movies that my standards are very low. But one of the scenes which is imprinted into my memory for eternity now. Now the zombies were attacking East London or something. It was just a fun and games, but very well done, like English comedy can be. They attacked an old people's home. And most of the old people were inside, but one of their friends was outside in the sunshine, just sunning himself. And they shouted at him, George, George, zombies are coming, come in. Now the trouble with old people is they cannot walk very fast. And he had one of these Zimmer frames. And so he was using his Zimmer frame. And he was chased by the zombies who also can't walk fast. And it was one of the weirdest races I ever seen. Come on, George, come on, George. I'm trying as fast. And the zombies were after him. And it was touch and go in the race. Of course, he got there just before the zombies got to him. But it was really close. That's crazy humor. But then I just know sometimes that humor I like. But anyway, you watch that little screen. And I noticed that after a few minutes, my mind fitted perfectly into the screen. I couldn't see the edges. You couldn't see the upholstery on the outside. It fit perfectly in. Just the same when you have these huge TV screens, which you see when I go into these hotels. Huge screens. And again, if you look at them, you notice your mind just fits perfectly in there. It doesn't go to the small bit in the center. You see the whole area, but you can't see the edges of the screen. It is just the way our mind works. It fits into the screen. So actually noticing that, I did suggest to people, you do not need to buy these huge screen TVs. Because your experience of the movie or the cricket match, whatever you're watching, is exactly the same if you have it in the small area. Your mind just fits in. And you can save a lot of money that way. Try it and see. Look at a small screen. Maybe watch the movie on your computer. And then watch it on a big screen. The experience, is it the same? The only time you notice the size of the screen is when it's not turned on. When it's turned on, your mind fits perfectly in there. Now, why am I saying this? It's because you notice when you first turn on that screen or watch that movie, you can see what's beyond the screen, you can see the edges of the screen. But after a while, if you put the center in sort of, say, the movie or the documentary, then all that is on the edges eventually falls off and disappears. Happens naturally. So the movie here, or the documentary, is your breathing. Put that in the center of your screen. Yeah, there may be noise outside, and a few aches and pains in the body, which, you know, the best you relax, there'll always be some ache or pain somewhere. But don't put that in the center of the screen. If you do, your meditation object, the breath will fall off. So you can hear the breath, you can still feel the breath in the center of your field of vision. You can hear somebody snoring, banging the door, but it's on the edges. If you start to complain about it, you actually bring the noise into the center of the screen. It's the most important thing to do. That's what you're focusing on, and you're not paying any attention to the breath anymore. You're literally taking the disturbance and putting that into the center, so the breath falls off. You lose the breath. So instead, always keep this metaphor of a screen in your field of awareness. Center is always the breath. And then these other things, yeah, you can hear the snoring over there somewhere. Yeah, you can, you know, feel the itch in your body, but it's over there somewhere. And after a while, your mind just fits in to the breath. And the other things fall off. You don't know what's going on. Now, use that simile of the TV, because it's also the case. I know one couple, I'm sure there's hundreds of couples who have experienced this. There were a Malaysian couple living in Perth, and they were watching a movie on the TV one afternoon. It must have been a wonderful movie, because after it finished, one of them got up to turn on the kettle to make themselves a cup of tea. The other one got up to go to the toilet. And as soon as they got up from the sofa, then they noticed that many things were missing in their house. Even in the shelf right behind the sofa. The burglar had come into the house while they were watching the TV, and were right behind them, maybe a foot behind the sofa, taking stuff off the shelf. And they didn't hear anything. They were just so watching the TV. And I said, if you could only meditate like that, you would be jhanas being enlightened by now. And you're meditating there, and somebody bangs the door or coughs out there 100 miles away, and you hear it. Because they had focused, and all the other noise, it was off the screen, off the radar. They couldn't perceive it. Now that is actually how this meditation works. And then it just things disappear. So anyway, now that's how to deal with disturbances. Don't put them in the center. Don't make a big deal about them. Like that guy who had the tumor in his nose. As soon as they realized that, oh, poor thing, it wasn't a big thing anymore. They weren't complaining anymore. So it wasn't center in their field of view. So it was over there. You know, he's breathing, a poor thing. And they just carried on watching the breath. And after a while, they couldn't hear that noise anymore. So anyway, with the breath meditation, once the body is relaxed, and once you've calmed the mind down enough, so the thoughts of the past and the future and fantasies aren't obsessing you, which they usually do, once you can be in the present moment, then you find your body starts to vanish. There's nothing else which is moving. Your mind is not moving into past and future or thoughts. Your body isn't moving, it's reasonably comfortable. And so what is left to watch? There's only one thing which is moving now. Your breathing. Which is why in meditation the breath often comes up naturally, by itself. You don't even choose to watch it. You're sitting there, you're letting go of the past and the future, just being calm and relaxed. Your lake is getting more and more calm and still, so the thoughts just tend to get so soft that they just vanish. And then the only thing left to watch is your breathing. That's why it is the meditation object to watch. And once it does start to occur, you know, you don't need to actually to locate your breath somewhere. Am I breathing in through the tip of my nose or through the belly or somewhere else? And in fact, it's a natural progression. Just know you're breathing in, you know you're breathing out. For me as a teacher, it's so easy to take people who've never meditated before and to give them a simple instruction. Close your eyes, breathe in and out 3 times, and then open your eyes. And they all do that. And then I ask, how did you know you were breathing in and out 3 times? There was an awareness there, a perception of the breath. That is what you watch in breath meditation. That which tells you, you're breathing in or breathing out. Simple, natural. How you know that, I don't care. As long as you know it. You don't have to feel it at the tip of the nose. I have to say this on every retreat because it does cause people problems if you don't understand what's going on. Some people hear that you have to watch the breath at the tip of the nose. If you're serious about getting jhana, if you really want to become a stream winner and an enlightened, you've got to watch it at the tip of the nose. So all these poor people, they start watching the breath at the tip of the nose. And after a small while, you get headache. Tension headache. The first time I came across this was the first time I taught in Malaysia. And all these meditators, they were complaining about samadhi headache. Samadhi is like stillness, but they thought it was concentration. And I'd never heard that. In all the years I was meditating in Thailand, I never heard people get headaches through meditation. In fact, you overcome headaches through meditation. You overcome all sorts of sicknesses through meditation. You don't get sick through meditation. What's going on there? And then after a while, you figured it out. This is what insight is. You figure out what's going on. And so, you know, you do a little bit of thinking outside the box. I got this nice little card, which somebody sent me the other day. And there was this guy scolding his cat. And in the picture was, you know, the litter box. And the guy scolded his cat, don't even contemplate thinking outside the box. You've got to do your poo in the box. So that's the only time you mustn't think outside of the box, if you're a cat with a litter tray. So anyway, I thought that was a nice little joke. But thinking outside the box, what's going on there? And you realize, if you watch the tip of the nose, if you observe the tip of the nose with your mind, it's just natural, your eyes go there as well. Here we go, taking my glasses off so you can see. I'm keeping my eyes open now. I'm now going to watch the breath at the tip of my nose. Look at my eyes. If you're watching the breath at the tip of the nose and I open your eyelids, this is what you'd be doing too. And it's no wonder after a quarter of an hour you get a headache across here. You've gone cross-eyed under your eyelids. Which is one of the reasons why it's not recommended to watch the breath at the tip of the nose. Because if you try that, your eyes go there as well. That's where you get headache from. So, and anyway, I was fortunate as a young man because I had hay fever. So just my father had asthma, so I got a little bit of his allergies, not all of them. And hay fever. So some of the months of the year, you were blocked up there. You couldn't breathe through your nose. I had to breathe through my mouth. And the teacher said, no, 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 you must breathe through your nose. But I can't. But you must. But I can't. Try it anyway. Thank you very much. So, I didn't know what to do. I actually thought I could only meditate maybe 9 months a year. And then, I found the alternative. You can watch the breath at your abdomen. The abdomen rising and falling. And I thought, wow, now I can meditate all year round. And that worked fine until I became a monk. But when I became a monk, when you watched your abdomen rising and falling, especially late in the afternoon or evening, Your abdomen was so close to your stomach. And my stomach was empty. And I was a young man. And I was so hungry. So on this retreat, please do not watch the breath of your abdomen about 6 or 7 or 8 o'clock at night. Oh, I want something to eat. I'm hungry. And that disturbed my whole meditation. So I was in a mess. Couldn't watch it in my nose. Couldn't watch it in my abdomen. What can I do? And adversity is one of the greatest places where insight could happen. Because, you know, you can't just do things the way other people said. You've got to find out your own way, which means you're actually contemplating, you're understanding things, you're investigating. And that's where it dawned on me. So the Buddha never said to watch the nose. He never said to watch the belly. He said to watch the breath. It's breath meditation, not nose meditation. It's not belly meditation, it's breath meditation, stupid. So I just watched the breath. And even if I was hungry, even if I had hay fever, even if you have a tumor in your nose, you're still breathing. So somehow or other I was breathing. So I found out how. I knew. And it was just a feeling. Didn't know where it was, didn't care where it was. What I did know was the breath was going in, the breath was going out. Easy. Problem solved. And it was really helpful because I wasn't attaching the feeling to any part of my body. It's much easier to let go of your body, to really let it go so it vanishes. You weren't paying any attention to it. It fell off the screen. So what I knew was the breath. Breath going in, breath going out. Breath going in, breath going out. And because it came naturally, because it was the only thing to watch, it didn't have any force to it. You would say, I better watch the breath. Come on, concentrate. Come on, Ajahn Brahm. Watch your breath. That just makes you so tense. And so, waste so much energy. It's just like you just rest your attention on the breath, like a bee just lands on a flower without damaging it. My attention just landing on the breath. So it just stayed there, very beautifully, very perfectly, not moving. Just watching the breath go in, watching the breath go out. Watching the breath go in, watching the breath go out. That is the first stage of breath meditation. It happens naturally, but it's nice that you know what's going on. You just know there's a breath going in, going out. And as you start to watch the breath going in, going out, if you really want to force the issue, sometimes I give people a little bit of help. Because over in places like Thailand, in Sri Lanka as well, people have developed ways of helping you watch the breath and make it a little bit more interesting at the beginning so the mind doesn't get bored and wander away. To give it some, like, add a bit of sugar in the tea, add a bit of chili on the curry, add a bit of salt on the fish and chips, you know, just to make it a little bit more tasty for you. So that little seasoning is using a mantra with the breathing. Over in Thailand, I was taught to use buddho, buddho, buddho along with the breath. Breathing in, buddho, breathing out, buddho. But that didn't really work for me. And when I came here and taught it to other people, it didn't work for Westerners either, because they didn't have a feeling for that word. You know, for people in Thailand, that was a powerful word. Even like Sri Lanka, the Buddha, that you've grown up, that's important, that's special, that's a powerful word. But for people in Australia, that's just some statue you have in the garden somewhere. That's about as much as they know about it. But I had to try and change things. So the next thing I tried to change from buddho, breathing in, breathing out, I asked people to use the word breathing in, shut, breathing out, up. Use that mantra, the shut up mantra. Breathing in, shut, breathing out, up. That didn't work very well because people like you just started laughing. You know you had to shut up, that was a problem, but just saying it to yourself, that didn't really work. So that wasn't much good either. There was another mantra I'll say in a moment about using it in walking meditation, which is really powerful. But the one which after many years, you have to have a mantra when you're doing breath meditation. It's more useful to develop a mantra, breathing in, peace, breathe out, let go. To try that with your breathing. Breathing in, peace, breathing out, let go. You can change that a little bit if you wish. If you are in pain, you're sick. Breathing in, health. breathing out the pain. You have a cancer, breathing in energy, breathing out the tumor. But when you do that, imagine if you're depressed, breathing in joy, breathing out the dullness, whatever it is. But when you do that, if it's going to work, it's not just the word, which is just the signpost, it's what that word means. What is peace? Really paint a picture about it. Feel it as best you possibly can. And then you breathe that into your body. Whatever is your problem, sickness, tiredness, pain, disappointment, past or future, whatever it is a problem. As you breathe out, imagine that going out from your body, from your mind, from your life with your out-breath. Imagine it falling away. Breathe in health, energy. Breathe out tiredness, sickness. Breathe in energy, peace, light. Breathe out the dullness, the darkness, the sickness. Find your own little way there. And do that because if you are sick, if you have got some chronic pain, if you have got a cancer, if you have got difficulty, it's important for you. And because it's important, it's much easier to do that. Which means that you actually breathe in this beautiful energy, health, peace, whatever it is you want, and you breathe out the problem. The mind is the forerunner of all things, the Buddha said. The mind is very powerful, much more powerful than you believe. And so even as you do that with the in-breath and the out-breath, again and again and again and again, number one, it works. Tumors do get reduced. Sicknesses do get sort of healed. Dullness, darkness, depression do get relieved. But you've got to keep on doing it. And you've got to not just say the words, feel it as much as you can. But also, it just helps you start to get aware of the breathing. So that's, you know, it gets a wonderful side effect. You don't die. That's only a side effect because it's only putting off death for a few more years. You're all going to die anyway. So, what is most important now, you're getting to be aware of your breathing, learning how to focus. And after a while, once that breath is right there for you, many, many minutes, you don't need the crutches anymore. You don't need the mantra. You can just watch the breathing. And that's much better. Just to watch the breath without any words, without any labels, without any visualizations of peace or sickness going out with the out-breath. You just watch it. And that's called this breath awareness. Now I'm just going to go back to the walking meditation now because they balance each other. With the walking meditation, you know, when you start, I mentioned yesterday, just 2 meters in front of you, start and just walk at a natural pace. Sometimes you can say left, right, but that really doesn't help. It's just so boring. So the best mantra, not buddho, lifting buddha, down toe, whatever, that doesn't really work. What really works is this mantra, which I first heard in Thailand, and I've adapted this. And especially in Indonesia, it works so beautifully, because the Indonesian words, they rhyme. So the Indonesian people here, one of the people I've already told, as you lift your foot, mata. So as left foot, mata, right foot, hati. Mati hati, mati hati, mati hati. And any Indonesians here that know that word means die for sure. I will die, that's for sure. I will die, that's for sure. Now you try that when you're doing walking meditation. Your left foot, as it moves, say to yourself, I will die. The right foot, that's for sure. I will die, that's for sure. At first you smile and laugh and think this is a joke, ha ha ha. I will die, that's for sure. But then you soon realize, this is no joke. This is the one thing, no matter what religion you are, all the other teachings you may doubt, that one you can be certain of. And that's you. I will die, that's for sure. I will die, that's for sure. I will die, that's for sure. So you come across the truth of your impermanence. And at first, that's scary. Carry on. I will die, that's for sure. I will die, that's for sure. You have to get to that stage of scariness, fear. That means it's real. You're facing that reality. Carry on walking. I will die, that's for sure. I will die, that's for sure. And once you've walked long enough and gone through the fear, then you feel incredibly peaceful. I will die, that's for sure. So why the hell are you thinking and worrying about all these stupid things? Being attached to your kids, to your health, to your appearance, to your business, to all this other stuff, boyfriends, girlfriends. You're going to die, baby. Let it go now. Enjoy. I will die, that's for sure. You have a beautiful sense of letting go. And then you're walking, like we say, like dead man walking. Free, happy, joyful, peaceful, not a worry in the world. I'm dead. So they say that you're dead because I was mentioning this is a peculiarity of Pali. I'll mention later on when I talk about stream winners. But it's like the mafia or the triads. If you cross, say, a bikie, you know, these really tough guys who deal drugs apparently, if you cross one of those, then they'll say, Ananda, you're dead. And it doesn't mean you're dead now, it means your death is certain. There's no way of escaping it. That's what the mafia bosses say. You're dead. And it's so true. You have been sentenced already. There's a contract out against you called life, which means it's going to end in your death. The assassin of old age and sickness is stalking you right now. Your coffin is approaching. I can see it every day, it comes closer. That's not a scary thing. You walk through the fear. I will die, that's for sure. I will die, that's for sure. And you feel incredibly peaceful afterwards. It puts everything in perspective. You feel just so free. Not a worry in the world. So, that's using the mantra, I will die, that's for sure, when you're doing walking meditation. Give it a try. It's excellent. And I'll say more about walking meditation, other methods of walking meditation afterwards. But once you get peaceful, you don't need the mantra anymore. You can just walk. Just like with the breath. Once you've done the mantra, you can just feel the breath. Breath going in, breath going out. Now, something happens at this point, which is very important. Because it's such a simple object, because the brain doesn't need much energy to actually to notice an in-breath and out-breath, it means the energy, which is usually spent controlling, doing, managing, forcing stuff, is all freed up to go into mindfulness. There are two parts to the human mind. One part I call the doer, the active part of the mind which thinks, which plans, which controls, which remembers, which does stuff, which initiates action. That is the doing mind. In Pali, that's called Sankara. Make stuff happen. The second part of the mind is just awareness, consciousness. That's like just vijnana. That's the knower. So that's the two main parts of the mind, the doer and the knower. Once you have that little framework to understand your own mind, doing, and just knowing what's happening, just passive observance. Why do you realize that? Many other things become very clear to you. Why you get tired is because you spend most of your energy doing something, reacting, planning, always doing things. And that's where 99% of your energy goes. And now imagine, just imagine at first, you do absolutely nothing. Just still, peaceful, not reacting, not thinking, just watching, something like the breath go in and out. Because you're passive, the energies of your mind have got nowhere else to go. They're not wasted in doing stuff. It all starts to pour into knowing. It pours into mindfulness. Your energy of your mind increases. You start to become more aware, more awake. You know what it's like in the morning? You wake up, you're hardly awake. But later on, when you've got energy, if it's not through meditation, it's through a cup of coffee, you wake up. You're alert. You can see things. You can feel things. This is what happens naturally without caffeine. Deep meditation, you really get energized, because energy not going into the doer but going into the knower, you're aware. And that's what happens with the breath meditation. Something so simple, you don't have to do very much. The body does the breathing, you don't do anything, you just sit there and watch. And because you're watching and doing nothing, that's an important part, what you're not doing. You're not controlling, you're just watching. It means you start to wake up. Your mindfulness starts to increase. And there's one lovely thing about the increase of mindfulness. The stronger it gets, the more happy you become. Why is it that people are miserable when they get up in the morning? But after they have a cup of coffee, they're happy. Why is that? Because it's force energy, or cup of tea if you're from India. Have a strong cup of tea, then people are happy. Why? It's just energy of the mind equals happiness. That's just the equation. So as the mind becomes still, as the energy just goes into mindfulness, not only do you see more, but what you see becomes more beautiful. You become happier. So that breath, people think the breath is boring. You just watch it a little while, and it becomes the most delightful thing you've ever seen. Wow, it becomes what I call the beautiful breath, the delightful breath. If you're doing walking meditation, I think that's boring, just watch the feet go up, go forward, go down again, there's nothing going on there. What? Spend a whole hour doing this, just watching my legs move? Can't I watch a movie or something interesting, the latest Star Wars movie? A lot of monks are very disappointed that they ordained before the Star Wars movie came out. Because it happened when Harry Potter was very, very popular. There was a monk I knew. He said, I'm not going to ordain until the last episode of Harry Potter comes up. Because he knew once he became a monk, he couldn't see that anymore. So he waited until the last episode of Harry Potter and then became... Otherwise he'd miss it. It's crazy people. So anyway... Whatever you see, even the breath becomes more delightful than Harry Potter. Just listen to the breath, it's just so wonderful. All it is because you're mindfulness. You've become energized. At last you're awake. And for those of you who haven't heard this before, the Buddha. Where does that word come from? It comes from the Pali word bujati, which means to wake up. These words were not sort of special words, they were just words taken from ordinary language. So if you ever want to do an English translation of the Buddha, what does it mean? It doesn't really mean the enlightened one. It means the awakened one. What does that really mean? I think you understand being asleep, not really seeing things, not really understanding, you know, where things are because you're half asleep. But as you meditate, become still, you feel yourself really waking up. Your awareness gets stronger than you've ever had before. And you realize how most of your life you have been 3/4 asleep. You wait until you have a good meditation, you know what I mean? You really are awake now. Really fully awake. You can feel. You can see. You can know really clearly because you've got energy in your mind. And this is also one of the reasons why people get depressed in today's world. Yeah, when I was young, a few people got depressed, but not as many as get depressed today. And I think, why is this? Is it because of chemicals in the food or in the atmosphere? No way. It's because we work much harder today than we've ever worked before. We do so much more. I remember on weekends, people would just hang around. My father would always have a sleep on Sunday afternoon for a couple of hours. Just we weren't doing much work these days. On the weekend, you've got so many things to do. You had a holiday, and people would spend most of the time just sitting on deck chairs doing nothing. Now, you play tennis, you play soccer, you go to Club Med, and there's activities every part of the day for you. No wonder you get tired and exhausted. People just don't know how to relax anymore. They know how to escape by doing stuff, but not just how to be. The result of that is some people, they get so tired, their brain gets so exhausted, it's called depression. They're tired, no energy left. And there'll be times in this retreat you feel, ugh. What to do? Nothing. Every time you struggle and strive, you waste your energy. Just stay there. Because if you just stay there, not giving energy into doing, it eventually just flows into knowing. You become more aware. And with the heightened awareness, things become more tasty, more beautiful. Everything gets so wonderful. If you think this is a beautiful retreat center, wait until after you've had a good meditation. And this retreat center is absolutely gorgeous. It's a heaven realm. Wow. You've never seen such a beautiful landscape before. It's always been like that, but you haven't been awake enough to see it. Even, weird thing, after meditation retreat, you go home to see your wife. You've been married to her for 40, 50 years. And you had a beautiful meditations in your retreat. And afterwards, you go home and see your wife and say, "Darling, you look so beautiful." She's always looked like that. But now your mind is just really powerful. Whatever you see is, wow, you're gorgeous, darling. Have you been to a spa? Have you done a makeover? No, I've done my mental makeover. I'm now awake, alert, I can see. That's something somebody asked me earlier on. It's just, I know, how can you sort of forgive people when they've hurt you, they disappoint you, you let them down? Have you ever noticed when you're really dull, you get very critical of other people? Because you can't see any good. You can only see the bad, like depression. Everything is yucky and dull and grey, and there's nothing good in a person or in the food or anywhere. But after meditation, deep meditation, your mindfulness gets so strong, and whatever it sees beauty in them. Even just the way the person shouts, oh, it's so cute. Even the way they scolded you, ah, that was just so nice, just the way they put all those incredible words together. I always like famous put-downs. I'm talking in the modesty. The most famous put-down which I've ever heard, there's a couple of really good ones, but the one which is my favourite one was this English playwright, very sharp-witted fellow called Oscar Wilde. And he came out from some nightclub, sort of early in the morning, totally drunk. And this was 1920s or something. And this English woman, very proper, very conservative, took one look at him and said, "Sir, you are drunk," with great disdain, trying to scold this young man. "Sir, you are drunk." And even though he was drunk, he still had his wit around him. And he looked at her and said, "Madam, you are ugly." "And the difference between us, madam, is in the morning I will be sober." Oh, that really hurts. That he could think of that when he was drunk is amazing. And one I heard the other day, good old Winston Churchill. Great put down. Winston Churchill, he was, people are talking about old age. Who would ever want to be 90? Who would ever want to live to be 90? With great sense and wisdom, Winston Churchill said, "Someone who is 89. What a great retort. It's actually true. But the recent one was, was Gandhi. Because apparently there's all these stories going around about Gandhi when he was a student in England. He did law in England, student of law. And so his law lecturer, he never got on with Mr. Gandhi. They were always fighting each other. And and so one day, his law professor decided to give Mr. Gandhi a test. "Mr. Gandhi, if you were walking down the street in London and you saw two bags abandoned, one contained a lot of money and the other one contained a lot of wisdom, and you could only pick up one or walk away. Which one would you pick up? The bag of wisdom and the bag of money. Without hesitation, the student came and said, I'll pick up the money. Yeah, see how stupid you are. Wisdom is worth much more than money. Of course it is, Professor. But everyone picks up what they don't already have. Straight away. <ooh. laughs> So the professor doesn't have any wisdom. Gandhi doesn't have any money. Fair enough. But anyway, the great put downs. Now, where was I going with this? This is supposed to be on meditation. It was about, oh, yeah, that's right. Just when your mind is woken up, because stillness, you can see beauty and stuff. You become very sharp and very powerful. So this is actually where you don't get depressed. And it's also where you can start watching the breath, and it's fun to watch the breath. When you do walking meditation, you know, you just, after a while, and many people get this in walking meditation before they get it in breath meditation, you're just walking, maybe you do a Hattie Hattie, whatever it is, I would know, that's for sure. But then you get peace, we just let it go, and just start watching the feet moving. Because you're not doing very much, energy goes into mindfulness instead of doing things, it's not wasted, and you become incredibly aware of all the movements in your legs and feet when you're walking. It's not just one step. There's thousands of muscles, literally thousands actually move just to have one step. And just you can feel it all. And it's incredibly sensitive and beautiful. You can feel just as your feet moves up, just all of the different sensations. As, you know, just the foot just arches up and just it lifts from the carpet or from the floor. You feel it moving through the air. And just moving forward. And the most amazing thing when I do this is when it meets the ground again. Just foot meeting carpet. Wow, that's so sensuous. You feel every part, every pore just touching the carpet. And just enjoy every moment of it. Wow, this is incredible. You really get into it. And just move it. You're just walking there. And just the foot goes down on the ground. And you feel the weight of your body. It's incredible movement. You know, you learn how to walk when you're a kid. You've forgotten how difficult it is. That's why when people do have strokes or, you know, other injuries, they have to learn how to walk again. How difficult it is to walk again, because there's so much movement there. And you're watching all of this. At last you're aware again. It's fascinating. And it's beautiful. And just walking there, having the time of your life, just walking backwards and forwards, really getting into it. It becomes delightful. And you're waking up, you're becoming still. From the stillness, the energies come up into your mind instead of doing stuff. And the breath becomes incredibly beautiful. And walking, having the time of your life, a huge amount of fun and joy. And that's why it's so hard to get on these retreats. 3 minutes and they're booked out. This is better than ecstasy, better than ice, better than any sort of happiness, what you're getting here. And it's all for free. And you can repeat it when you go home afterwards. Really great joy. It's peace, stillness. And there it's for you. So, you know what to do. Follow the instructions. Relax the body. Relax the mind. Be still, be peaceful until the energy comes up. Your mindfulness becomes strong enough to be able to see the breath easily. It's strong enough to be able to feel the sensations in the feet as you're moving up and you're going forward. That's the reason why many people start to walk slowly. Not because they intend to. There's just too much going on. You can't walk fast. My story, first year in Thailand, I was in Bangkok, and I do walking meditation every morning before lunch for an hour. And it was in this big hall, or maybe not that big, maybe this size here. And there was, for some reason, they put a grandfather clock there, which chimed the quarter hours like Big Ben in London. Crazy idea if you wanted to meditate, but it was wonderful for walking meditation because you know exactly how the time was going. And it took me half an hour to walk from one end to the other, another half an hour back again. I don't do one circuit, because it got really slow and really peaceful. And I remember one time I was right in the middle, you know, maybe half an hour, 35 minutes, and I was just watching just these incredible movements of the feet as they lifted up from the carpet. And it was amazing just what was going on there. And the sage in the center of the screen. In the edge of my screen, I could hear something like 1,000 miles away. Brahma Wang Soul! Brahma Wang! That was really interesting. It was so beautiful, just the sound of all the different tones of the voice. Until I realized, hang on, someone is shouting at me, and there's a monk about this far from my ear. That's what it feels like. You're in this incredible, beautiful bubble of peace and silence and happiness. And my mind was just so into this walking. This guy was trying to get my attention. Brahma Wang Soul! And then I realized it was a monk. So out of respect, I had to somehow or other get out of the meditation. He can't get out quickly. He just can't do it. So I decided I had to turn my head to look at who this was. But as I was turning my head, there were so many sensations of just turning ahead. It's incredible. Just to move ahead from the left to the right, there's so many muscles have to be moved. And you could feel every one of them. And it took me about 3 or 4 minutes to actually to move my head around until I could see this was one of the senior monks. And all I could do was say very slowly, because to speak, the number of muscles which move in your throat, what? And he reminded me there was a dana blessing at somebody's house and I'd forgotten all about it and they'd come to try and get me out to take me to the blessing ceremony. And I was late. But it was a wonderful experience because you can't come out quickly. You're just beautifully still and peaceful, having a wonderful time. And that's what I wish for you. You can go in there and be walking so peacefully, so calmly that someone comes in, Bianca comes and said, there's a fire! There's a fire. And you walk there. No, I hope that we've got no chance when the fire is this time. But that's a beautiful peace and stillness you get into. It's not just for the happiness sake, there's all sorts of other benefits, and I'll talk about those later, but that's just the breath meditation. Sum up, just do the preliminaries first of all before you even start watching the breath. Don't watch the breath at the tip of the nose or the belly, just be it natural, however you watch it. And to start off with, you know, you may do these little mantras with the breath, which is, you know, breathing in peace without letting go. Make variations, whatever is necessary for you. So you can really watch the breath. You're very peaceful, so you don't need any mantras anymore. The breath is just so easy to watch. And your mindfulness gets so strong, it's delightful. You're walking so strong, it's delightful just walking, enjoying yourself. Get to that stage. Delightful walking, delightful breath. And I will tell you the next episode of The Journey to Enlightenment tomorrow. Episode four coming tomorrow. Very good. So, sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Oh, stretching is so good. All endorphins go into my bloodstream, yes. Very good, so have a happy day.